and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
I rode with him. I know what an idiot this guy is.
Pedro Fernandez.
Hey, Pedro, how you doing? And good evening to everybody out there listening to the show.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar Sports Byline Studio. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. Often imitated, but hardly duplicated. 37, make that 38 plus years now. You want to talk podcasts? I'm the originator of all that kind of stuff. Straight up, my name is Pedro Fernandez. Welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. And this hour of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, of course, we'll continue to talk about the dramatic heavyweight title fight of last night. Of course, the WBC and Lineal Ring Magazine Championship on the line when Tyson Fury stepped in to the ring, of course, at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. Right on the Las Vegas Strip, undefeated, 30-0, now 31-0. Of course, in 11th round, knockout winner, TKO winner. Bottom line is Deontay Wilder fought his heart out. You cannot ask for more from a fighter. You cannot ask more for more from a guy's heart. More, I mean, he was driven. There was absolutely no doubt about it. But when you just the talent wasn't there. What I'm trying to say is, I'm not trying to say Tyson Fury was like a race car or anything like that. But if he was a race car, Deontay Wilder was like maybe a mid-level car. You know what I'm saying? He just wasn't up to that level. He's just not at Tyson Fury's level. He's got the power. He knocks him down. Of course, that one-punch knockout stuff, that's must-see TV. No doubt about that. That's why you tune in. That's why you're probably going to want to tune into a fourth fight between these two guys. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe it got old after three. But last night, maybe it didn't. The most dramatic heavyweight fight in a long time. Knockdowns, five knockdowns and all. Both guys going down. I mean, it was drama. Strippers all around me. People drinking, people having a great time, this and that. And I'm just saying to myself, let me watch the fight. Bottom line is, great fight, great night, no doubt about that. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
And all these fighters that are, you know, they share in the revenue. They do share in the revenue. They have they have the upside in the pay-per-view, you know?
Mr. Dana White, wherever you are, I have a hit list. But I want to start getting paid. I want to start making heavyweight money.
Ay, 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 ay.
It is a great weekend. The Frito Bandito, talking about Dana White himself, you heard him there. All fighters get a share of the pay-per-view. He, of course, tried to come out with some facts the other day, or alternative facts. Bottom line is the fighters say they're not getting paid. At the end of the day, I mean, guys get their heads handed to them for like 20 grand. Sometimes, $20,000. And if guess what? If you get your head handed to you and you're in the fight of the night, even if you lose maybe, you get an extra $50,000. So in other words, maybe you're going to make $70,000. But guess what? You're not going to be the same ever again. It's not the same when you get kicked in the head or when you get hit with a forearm or you get elbowed, that kind of good stuff. It's just not the same. The force is different than a tempered punch with a glove. That's just the way it is. And people say to me, the gloves. Yeah, the gloves in MMA are 4-ounce gloves. Does that make it more exciting? Not really. Some of those guys can't fight. In other words, boxing can spread. They don't know boxing 101. Had they been skilled in boxing 101, 4-ounce gloves would be like ideal for them. They'd be schooling people. Imagine that, being able to box somebody with 4-ounce gloves, crack them coming in, this and that. They go to make that move coming in on you, man. You crack them with a straight right hand or a right hand lead, this and that. The fundamentals look easy in beating these guys because in the early on, as far as the MMA world was concerned, it was very one-dimensional. I mean, you know, Royce Gracie and those type of guys, he was a wrestler type of guy. He would get you to move, the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, get you on the ground, sometimes from the bottom and beat you, okay? But that wasn't exciting. And then MMA sort of got it a little bit more into street fighting stuff, and they brought in a little bit of brawling, a little bit more. Of course, then UFC went legit when they went legit with Dana White and, of course, the Fertitta brothers when they bought it up, bought it from the people from Brazil. And from that point in time, I guess the UFC has just taken off, lost $35 million bucks to begin with. And then after that, they had the Ultimate Fighter. I think it was on, I forget what that TV network it was, Bang TV or something like that. But anyway, that was their move. That was their first move. And they did real well with that. And from that point forward, they haven't looked back. In fact, they sold this company about 2 years ago for $4.2 billion or $4,200 million. And that's a lot of money. Is it worth that much? Well, I don't think so. I think the franchise is like the Dallas Cowboys and the Barcelona soccer team and teams like that. Hey, maybe the San Francisco Giants. Are the Giants starting to choke here or what? Of course, it's a 1-1 as far as him and them and the L.A. Dodgers. Of course, this is a big rivalry in baseball, Los Angeles and San Francisco, much like it was back in the day when it was the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Giants. In other words, guys, they were crosstown rivals. Now they're cross-state rivals, but Bitterness, no doubt about that, between the Dodger fans and the Giant fans. So I think you're going to go with game two, I think, later today here in San Francisco. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into the world of boxing. And we just talked a little MMA. Huey Fury, the brother of Tyson Fury, is going to take on Christian Hammer. It's going to go down the 16th of October. It'll be on Sky Sports, from Newcastle Arena in Newcastle, the UK. As far as the upcoming fights are concerned, this one's got me a little bummed because I'm not a Mikey Garcia fan. I'm just not. Mikey Garcia's fight taking on Sandor Martin. Sandor Martin may be a formidable foe and things like that. But Mikey Garcia to me is a guy that never fulfilled his potential. He never dared to be great. He just didn't. He dared to make money, but he didn't dare to be great. And there's a difference, okay? The fight he took with Errol Spence, he didn't really try to win that fight. In other words, once he realized he was outmanned, outsized, outgunned, he said to himself, you know, I'm not going to get hurt here. I'm just going to make this semi-competitive and go the distance. That's the way it looked, okay, on paper. He hasn't fought in a long time. He comes back. People say, people look to him as a great, great fighter. What has he done of lately? What have you done for me lately? I mean, he had a chance. He can go back to 135 if he's really that great of a fighter. He's fighting this fight at 140. But if he's really that great of a fighter, Mikey Garcia, after taking on Sandor Martin, if he beats him, he can go back to 135 where there's the aforementioned Tank Davis and Rolly Romero. Going to hook it up on December the 5th. Expect Tank Davis to win that fight. Of course, there's the kid from San Francisco, Devin Haney, and, of course, Ryan Garcia as well. So we got a lot of talent at 135. And 135 pounds, of course, has always been the magic division, the lightweight division. That was the division that brought us the man with the great hands of stone. We're talking about Roberto Duran. So lightweights are where it's at. Now, will the lightweights end up fighting each other? You know, evidently they're talking about doing this. Ryan Garcia is going to take on X before the end of the year, okay? And then towards the early part of next year, if Gervonta Davis is successful as well on December the 5th, okay, they're going to hook it up in some type of pay-per-view fight or a big mega fight come May 2022. Bottom line is this is a fight that needs to happen. These guys need to fight each other. Big fights need to happen. I mean, I wasn't the biggest. I didn't really want to see Deontay Wilder dance with Tyson Fury for the third time. I thought Tyson Fury beat him now three times. Okay, there's no doubt about it. But the bottom line is that competitiveness and that drama last night. I mean, it just had me. I jumped up four or five times during the fight. I mean, you don't jump up like that. People say to me, oh, did you like Hagler Hearns? I was there ringside. I didn't jump up. I didn't feel compelled to jump up in this stuff. I mean, I watched it, but I didn't feel compelled to jump up in this kind of good stuff. Last night, I was jumping out of my chair. In fact, I looked like a jack-in-the-box. No doubt about that. Hats off to both guys, especially Deontay Wilder, because he kept trying, you guys. I mean, as much as I don't like his personality and things like that, he kept trying. I mean, you can hear him. You can see the grit in him, the grit that he really wanted to get up. He wanted to continue, and he was fighting tired. And when you're fighting tired, you know it. It's psychologically, it's like, hey, man, you're tired. And that's all you can think about is this guy telling you you're tired. You're winded. There's lactic acid in both your arms. Your arms are heavy. It's hard to throw shots, this and that. You know, you're thinking, oh, I want to win this fight, this and that. But the lactic acid buildup, basically when this muscular guy, I think, just took its toll last night as far as Deontay Wilder was concerned, because he got gassed early. And once you get gassed, as far as the heavyweight is concerned, rarely do guys come back. I'm not trying to say that Tyson Fury didn't come back from being gassed. He came back from being rocked. I don't think he was ever gassed. I think as far as conditioning was concerned, Tyson Fury was in better shape last night. But at the end of the day, I don't think he was in that great shape either. I think he needs to go back to the drawing board. I think this year and a half off, or however long this sabbatical was for Tyson Fury, has not worked well for him as far as his boxing career is concerned. The reason why I say that is concerned, you know, it's time off. And he's got all these psychological issues. Yeah, he's talking about God, this and that, but then he's had his problems with cocaine and booze and depression and suicide, all that kind of stuff put together. You want to keep that kind of guy active. You want to keep him in the ring and active. And, of course, he's had, like, a couple cancellations, a couple postponements. At the end of the day, Tyson Fury looked a little bit rusty last night, but it was exciting, no doubt about that. Still, it ain't no Muhammad Ali. It ain't no Mike Tyson. And it's probably not even a Joe Louis, just a big guy at 6'10". Sorry, pal, but if he was 6'1", he wouldn't be all that much. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council. Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Time to take it across the pond to the UK and bring in Sir Kenneth Rainford. I call him Sir Kenny, of course. He is our boxing royalty, the boxing ambassador of goodwill from the UK. How's the UK rocking after that fight last night?
Oh, everyone's loving it. Everyone's loving it. Obviously, it was a good fight to watch. Not the greatest, but it was a good fight to watch for what's around today. And the right man won.
I jumped up 4 or 5 times during the fight, at least from where I was sitting. Of course, I went to a strip club. I got to watch the fight around a lot of flesh. But the bottom line is, I'm watching on the big screen. I jumped out of my chair like 4 or 5 different times. And each time that I jumped out of my chair, I was sure the fight was over.
Yeah. It was a rock 'em sock 'em affair, you know. But the fourth round, I actually got offered a bet, 100-1. Deontay Wilder knocking out Tyson Fury within 6 rounds. So I took a $10 bet on it, and it nearly come true in the 4th round.
Whoa, okay. I once in a while, I used to bet those sucker bets. That's what they call them, sucker bets. But I used to do those sucker bets, this and that. And I forget who it was. A friend of mine got like a 40-1 shot, like on, I think he put $100 down or something. I forget one fight it was. A 40-1 in a certain round. He got 40-1 and he got it and he scored. So for you guys that win on occasion, more power to you. But Tyson Fury, the skill level, what happened to the skill level that we were accustomed to with him? Because he wasn't all that, he could have done, you know, you see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's cut to the quick. You know, Deontay Wilder fought like a robot. Tyson Fury blatantly used his size and his weight to tire Wilder out. It wasn't the greatest skills match, and he does have skills, but he just seemed to want to use his size and weight to just drag Wilder through the sand until he had nothing more to give, and then take him out, you know.
You know, but listen, you and I know there's nothing worse than being inside that squared circle and being tired, because your mind is tired to an extent, but your mind is still working. You're saying to yourself, I want to do things, and there's lactic acid in your arms, your legs are stiff, the whole nine yards. You know, I got to give him all kinds of credit. I'm not a big fan of his at all. I think he's a jerk, but the bottom line is, you know, he showed tremendous intestinal fortitude last night.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what, Pedro? He made the Cardinals mistake again. We spoke about this before. He came in too heavy. Wilder's game is not about strength and size. It's about speed and agility and getting that right hand in. If he'd have come in under 220 I believe he would have, I don't know, saying he would have won the fight, but he would have given himself a better chance to win the fight early. He was never going to win it late for me. It had to be before six rounds. And I just feel, you know, you take 20 pounds off that Wilder last night, I think it would have been, it could have been a different outcome.
All right. So are you trying to tell me that Oleg Usyk could punch holes in Tyson Fury as well?
No, because what it is with Wilder relies on speed with the right hand. Usyk is a work machine. Where Usyk comes good is the head movements. He's not a stationary target. He's on the move all the time. Thanks. He's not a puncher, but his work rate will work. But styles wise, I don't think Usyk lives with Tyson Fury. I really don't.
So, but he makes himself a good pot of money. And bottom line is, you and I know, we want these fighters to make as much as they can every time they step into the ring, because, you know, the price they pay, people don't realize that. Somebody said to me the other day, you know, what's it like to be a boxer? I said, I really don't know, because I didn't, you know, I didn't have to fight professionally. It wasn't my lifestyle and this and that. But for the guys that did, the road is rough. And, you know, the guys that make it, I think the percentage of boxers that make it on a living back in the old days was like 7-8% max. 7-8% of the guys fight and make a living off boxing. Now I think with different companies stepping in and managing people, especially European companies. Talk to me about that. What about these European companies coming in and managing fighters, promoting fighters, and giving them salaries? Is that a good thing?
It's a good thing, but you have to worry about how long it can continue. You know, the biggest one being MTK Global. I mean, they're spending fortunes, absolute fortunes, you know, subsidizing training camps, gymnasiums, fighters, wages, you know, directors, trainers. You know, where does all this money come from and how do they get it back?
Well, that's a good point. Kenny Rainford is our guest, of course, coming to us from the UK. He is our UK boxing specialist, no doubt about that. Boxing's goodwill ambassador from the UK. We did the Ernie Shavers interview that I did a few years ago. Of course, when he published the book, we did that last week. Ernie celebrated birthday number 77 a couple of weeks ago. You've been talking to him?
Yeah, I spoke to him. I spoke to him on his birthday, and I spoke to him on the anniversary of when he fought Ali and Holmes, September 28th and 29th.
Kenny, can you imagine if the phone was free back in the day when we were dialing across the pond? Can you imagine if the phone was free then? I had a friend of mine who was a booking agent down there in Florida. You know what his phone bill was one month?
Thousands.
$4,700.
Yeah.
People don't realize that when you used to call from San Francisco to Las Vegas, it was like $1.50 a minute. And if you called like New York at last, you went international, went crazy, and now you can call everywhere for free.
Yeah, crazy.
You know,
but you know, that's a good thing.
That is a good thing. One of the good things that come out of the internet, no doubt about it, took away those robbers with the phone cards and all that kind of good stuff. Now, UK boxing. People were up at 6 o'clock in the morning. That's when the fight started, at 6 o'clock in the morning in the UK. Did they go to sleep, or did they stay awake, or was you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning? How did you do it?
Me personally, I was at work, so I was trying to watch the British boys that were boxing last night on the zone. Mm-hmm. I caught a few snippets of the Smith and Fowler fight. I came home and basically just stuck it out till 4:30 in the morning when the fight came on, and then went to bed after it. You know.
Yeah. One time I stuck it out.
The majority of people stay up. They just stay up. Unfortunately, well, fortunately or unfortunately, you know, Liverpool's a party town, and a lot of people probably saw the fight last night but don't remember it.
Well, you know, I sat and watched the fight with a few British folks at the Condor Club here in San Francisco. Of course, about 3 or 4 blocks from my studio here, and they were all into it, and we kept bumping each other's fists, saying we were like bye bye. You know, I was going to run to the car as soon as the fight was over, right? So I bumped fists with these guys 3 or 4 different times, thinking the fight was over.
Yeah,
and it wasn't. So, I mean, heavyweights aside, Oleg Usyk now and your buddy Anthony Joshua, I know that you're buddy. I want to put it to you like that. I'm just joking. Anyway, they're going to do it again. Kenny, is there any, could anything be different? I thought it was such a boxing 101 clinic that nothing outside of knocking Usyk out could change the outcome of a second fight.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I predicted the fight somewhat. I did predict Joshua to win it eventually, but to be massively behind against Usyk, he carried it through. I do actually believe that Usyk will be beaten in the rematch. I think, you know, Joshua will find something within his limited arsenal to beat Usyk.
He's not the pedigree.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I just think he's going to dig deep down. It's not going to be a classic. It's not going to be a war. It's not going to be anything great. I think he's just going to, like the Andy Ruiz rematch, I think he's just going to peck and poke and you know, score a close decision win over Usyk to make the Joshua fight, whether that happens or not.
I want to bet on Usyk on this one. Of course, you can give me like, we bet a beer on that one. Two beers to one. You got to give me 2-1 on that one. But the bottom line is, I think Usyk has got the style. Once you have a style over a guy and you beat him decisively, you should be able to beat him decisively in the rematch. The only way that Andy Ruiz didn't beat Joshua the second time was he didn't prepare. I mean, come on, he went to camp at 317 pounds.
Stayed in the kitchen.
Stayed in the kitchen.
We'll see. Not even excited about the fight, which is sad, really. Usyk against Anthony Joshua. But like I say, I've just got a feeling Anthony Joshua will scrape out a razor-thin decision in the rematch to eventually make this thing happen, and then he'll get knocked out. I still believe that Wilder would knock Joshua and Usyk out as well. I still think that despite the limitations, that you know, Wilder is the second best heavyweight out there.
Can you teach a guy endurance?
As you know, Pedro, a lot of endurance is down to relaxing. I'm not just saying it. I was super, super fit. There was nothing I couldn't do. But when you get in a boxing ring and them lights are on you and the crowd's watching and someone's coming at you from the other corner, you can be the most conditioned fighter in the world. If you're not relaxed and you're not calm and you're not confident, you're going to blow out.
Okay. I saw the luckiest man in the world last night. I continue to be the luckiest man in the boxing world without a doubt. Frank Warren, the only guy I know that can survive an assassination attempt by a guy that looked a lot like Terry Marsh and then getting beat up by Mike Tyson, but he's back in the winner's circle. He's got Tyson Fury, and you know what? I'm a Frank fan to an extent. Frank's always been nice to me, man. Do people in the UK respect him?
He's liked and he's hated, depending on who you are. He was notorious at one time for not paying his bills, so them people are going to hate him. and the people around him that, you know, he done good with, they like him, you know.
Okay. The best pound for pound right now, of course, the pound for pound king, the once beaten and with one draw, talking about Canelo Alvarez, taking on Caleb Plant. Is Canelo in deep water here?
I don't think so.
So if you were a betting man, you would bet Canelo inside the distance?
I'm gonna go with Canelo, late stoppage or maybe points, but I'm looking at the late stoppage, mate.
Okay. Is there anybody on the horizon, maybe a David Benavidez, do you think could challenge Canelo?
Possibly, yeah. Our friend Mr. Smith who challenged him and came unstuck, big time. Okay. You know, you speak to him and he just tells you that Canelo's unbeatable.
Okay. There's 1,000 Calibs out there. Do you have another Calib that can fight Canelo? You know what I'm trying to mean? Callum Smith, Callum. I mean, he's fighting all these Callums. Bottom line is, of course, he's, still the once beaten pound for pound king. Anyway, as we take away, we walk away from last night. I want to thank you for your time today, of course. I know it's late in the day for you and you've been up all day and all night and that kind of good stuff. But man, you're the class act. How are you and your lovely daughter doing?
We're doing great. She's costing me a fortune, but she's doing great.
She's still riding the ponies?
She's been riding at the Horse of the Year show this week, yeah.
Well, I want you to check in with me on that and wish her the very best of luck from Pedro Fernandez, okay? All right. The great Kenny Rainford. So Kenneth Rainford, of course, our boxing expert from the UK on Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. What happened to the world that day?
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC with Pedro Fernandez. Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
October 10th, 1987, Jose Luis Ramirez was in action defending the WBC title. I remember in 1984, I was in the PAL gym, the San Jose PAL gym, and I had no idea he was who he was. I mean, he had this nice headgear on, this kind of good stuff. He went a couple rounds, and I don't remember anything special, this and that. But of course, he was like an 8 or a 10 round fighter at that point in time. He had like 70 or 80 fights. I didn't know he had as many fights as he had. But Chris Gomez didn't want to tell me anything because he was afraid I would like get psyched out or something. Like that. I didn't get psyched out, but I didn't do all that well against Jose Luis Ramirez either. Anyway, bottom line is Jose Luis Ramirez, of course, involved in some exciting fights as far as the lightweight division is concerned. He and Edwin Rosario went back and forth, of course. But he got schooled in June of 1985 and probably a one-sided shutout when Hector Macho Camacho just painted him like a brown picket fence. I mean, he just did. I think it was Riviera Hotel, Las Vegas, Nevada. Wow, just what a paint job. Just Camacho all over. In fact, speaking of the Macho Man, you know, of all the crazy things that he's done, I keep reading about crazier things. I mean, I told you about the time having to beg him to come to a fight where he was all coked out and coked out of his mind in the fight. People were at the arena ready to get in. I mean, there were 4 round fights taking place and Hector wasn't coming. He was the main event. Stuff like that. So Camacho's had all his different yins and yangs, okay? But at the end of the day, I look back at him, and there's not too many guys who were as colorful as Hector Camacho. And he could really fight. It wasn't like he was all flash. No, he could fight. Of course, until he got rocked by Edwin Rosario in that battle they had in MSG, until he got rocked, of course, with that big left hook. From that point forward, he wasn't all that macho. But before that, he was a daredevil. He dared to be great. From that point forward, he wanted to fight to survive. I don't think he was ever stopped in his entire career. So props to Macho Man Hector Camacho. But Jose Luis Ramirez, got to give that guy some props because I didn't think he was all that talented. In fact, they had told me if I'd have known who he was and that kind of good stuff, I'd have tried to do a little bit better than I did. But the bottom line is, Jose Luis Ramirez, of course, went on to win the WBC lightweight title before losing it so dramatically. I mean, he Macho Camacho lit him up like the White House Christmas tree. October 2nd, 1980, it was Las Vegas, Nevada. The purse was $6 million for Larry Holmes and $8 million for Muhammad Ali, except Don King supposedly or allegedly didn't pay him the whole $8 million. Don said the fight didn't do too well, so he got Ali to take $4 million reportedly. Anyway, so get this. They're getting ready to fight. October 2nd, 1980. And you know, you've got a bad feeling in your gut because the guy's 38 years old. He hasn't looked that good. If you objectively look back at the Spinks fights, both Spinks fights, having lost the first fight to the virtual novice Leon Spinks, although he was an Olympic gold medalist in 1976, he was a novice as a professional, like 11 fights or something like that. Okay. And then the rematch, you know, he won the rematch, but it wasn't like something like vintage Ali or anything like that. For him to come back 2 years later, almost 3 years later, and take on Larry Holmes, who was the best pound-for-pound fighter at that stage of the game, no doubt about that. I mean, the Eastern Assassin had a jab that was unparalleled in boxing. Nobody could out-jab him. In fact, probably in history, he probably has the best jab in heavyweight history. I mean, he just does. You know, and people dog him for the Rocky Marciano comments and this and that. Let's be frank about this, okay? Rocky Marciano couldn't have carried his jock strap. I could have used all kinds of... It's just, they're different worlds. I just can't believe that somebody would think that Rocky Marciano, tough, no doubt about that. But, you know, the guys that he fought were the average guys he fought as far as heavyweight contenders were concerned. I think they were 34.5 years of age. In other words, he was fighting nothing but old men. Maybe that's the best there were at that point in time. But Archie Moore almost had him. And then he retired because I think he realized there were bigger and better fighters coming down the track. Guys like Zora Foley, Sonny Liston for the most part, but Marciano and Holmes, that got Holmes in all kinds of trouble, saying that Marciano wasn't nothing. And Marciano was significant for his time. He just was. But as far as modern day, against the big guys, I don't think so. I think he'd be waving in air all night long. He just would. That's what you hear with those hooks going by. And he'd be tired after 5 or 6 rounds because he wasn't tired because he was in good shape. And when he threw punches, he didn't get tired because he was connecting for the most part. He would connect on guys. Okay. And when Rocky connected on you, it was all over. But I couldn't see him connecting on Ali and when they had that Ali and I talked about that, the computerized fight they had when Ali was in, hiatus or on a sabbatical because he wouldn't step forward and take the United States Army's draft. Of course, so he filmed this fight with Rocky Marciano. Marciano got a toupee, a hair replacement, the whole nine yards, tried to look young and this and that. And he put up a formidable fight. And for the most part, I think the fight was shown on closed circuit. And Marciano won by a stoppage. Probably not realistic. But at that point in time, I guess Cassius Clay, he was Muhammad Ali at that point in time, he needed the money. He wasn't fighting. I mean, he wasn't making a dime. He just wasn't. I mean, here's a guy that had his livelihood taken away from him because he decided he wasn't a step forward and lead other young men into slaughter. Because he realized, he said, I realize if I go into this Vietnam War type of thing, you're not going to send me into battle. I'm not going to get killed. Nobody's going to murder me and that kind of good stuff. But you're going to use me to promote war. And I don't want you to do that. I don't want you to use me to bring other young men to slaughter. I just don't want to do that. And he didn't do it. And of course, eventually the United States Supreme Court agreed with him. He was a conscientious objector. But, Ali and Holmes, I was there. That was like our first trip to Las Vegas, and it was sad. We had sad trips to Las Vegas. Roberto Duran getting knocked out by Tommy Ernst in two rounds. That sort of muted my Hector and myself without a doubt. But, the Ali Holmes fight, it was just, we knew it was over, and you sort of knew it was over before, and you kept wanting to see him come back. You kept saying to yourself, man, can he do this? Can he do this? Can he do this? And the writing just wasn't on the wall, because we all know that Father Time is undefeated. He's 38 years old, going on 98 years old. And I told you about the Dr. Williams and the Thyrolar drugs he was taking, that kind of good stuff to lose weight. And at the end of the day, that was detrimental. I'm not trying to say that he would have beaten Larry Holmes, but I think he would have performed a lot better. But he might not have looked as good physically. So he was willing to give up by him taking these drugs. Muhammad Ali had took some drugs called Thyrolar, prescribed by a guy by the name of Dr. Williams for the Ali Holmes fight. Had he not taken the drugs, he'd have looked a little puffier. He'd have been a little fatter, but he might have been able to, throw a punch here and there. Because for 10 rounds, the fight was stopped after the 10th round. For 10 rounds, Muhammad Ali got lit up like a White House Christmas tree. And people say to me, Larry Holmes, he was brutal. He took it out on Muhammad Ali, all the frustrations. And that. I thought he took it easy on Ali. I mean, I seen Larry Holmes beat up Muhammad Ali in the gym, 1974. Look at some of the films, Brain, Skill, and Guts. That movie by Muhammad Ali, of course, was put together, I think, by Bill Caton in his Big Fights film company. But watch that film. Watch the films of that sparring session when Ali was getting ready for George Foreman. 1974, Zaire, Africa was the eventual site of the fight. But they were in Deer Lake, Pennsylvania, sparring. And Larry was like, who is he? Larry, who is this guy? And this was 4 years before Larry won the title. So Larry was that good of a fighter early on. There's no doubt about it. Of course, he had his problems in the Olympics, I think, or the Olympic trials with Dwayne Bobick. But outside of that, Larry's never, ever showed a lack of intestinal fortitude. And it's unfortunate that he was put in the position to follow Muhammad Ali. It's sort of like following Kennedy as president. It just doesn't work out. It just doesn't work. There's not another Muhammad Ali. And poor Larry Holmes kept trying to be himself, but he didn't know how to be himself. I mean, I remember he got tough with me. The first time I ever met him, he insulted me. He just did. I mean, I said something to him, and whoa, okay. This is the way he treats people. Larry Holmes was nasty. This was in Las Vegas. He was getting ready in 1982, I believe, for the Jerry Cooney fight. But, of course, that fight put him on the defensive. He was the bad guy going in. He was the black guy versus the white guy. The white guy, of course, got introduced second in the history of boxing. I have never seen a champion, especially a heavyweight champion. Never seen a champion introduced first. Never saw it before in my life. Never, ever, ever. And they're introducing Larry Holmes first. And I'm saying to myself, what is wrong with this picture? What is wrong with this picture? Well, Larry Holmes was the heavyweight champion of the world. So he should have been announced second. I mean, that's just customs. That's just the way it's done. Come on. There's no other way to do it. But the exception to the rule was Gentleman Jerry Cooney. And that's why in that second round, although the best of friends, these guys are the best of friends today. They are. Larry Holmes and Jerry Cooney are the best of friends. But for that fight that night, Jerry could have got taken out in the second round. Larry could have took Jerry out in the second round. And instead, he pummeled him and punished him for another 10 rounds. This is the way it was. I mean, there was bad blood between these two guys. And it wasn't between Cooney. Cooney was like a dude adult. He just was. Cooney wasn't the smartest guy in the world. He never developed a personality until he was in his 30s and quit drinking. I kid you not. I mean, I had him on the show when he was drinking and drunk in the past, talking about his kids' testicular size and things like that. I mean, just talking drunk stuff. You know, he was like inebriated. I didn't know at when we started the interview, but I knew about 5 minutes in of a 10-minute interview that Jerry was sauced. Okay, but Jerry, of course, went on the wagon, been on the wagon for a long time. He's clean, gave up the cocaine. Supposedly there was some cocaine involved there, but he gave up the coke and the booze. And he's got a couple of organizations going on that just support fighters. In fact, he and I were together in what Lakeport, Illinois, to honor both the late Greg Page. He was alive then. And Gerald McClellan. Both fighters were hurt in the boxing ring. Of course, Gerald McClellan went over to England and fought Nigel Benn. And he knocked Nigel Benn out of the ring in the first round, and the fight should have been over. But somehow the referee, I can't remember his name right now, allowed it to continue. And then Gerald, because he strained to make weight, although the fight was 168 pounds, Gerald would be like 180 pounds the day before the fight. He would lose incredible amounts of weight to get down to 168 pound limit, eating 160 pound and 160 before that. Anyway, I think is the fluid in his brain wasn't happening, because when you dry out like that, that's what goes, the fluid in your brain. So he got hit. He's never been the same. He's blind. He can't see too well. Of course, we had this big get together in Rockport, Illinois. His sister put it together with Jerry Cooney and his sister Lisa McCullough. And he kept saying to me, this was sad. He kept saying to me, Pedro, where's Emmanuel? Where's Emmanuel, Page? Was Emmanuel coming? And I didn't know what to say. I mean, you know, the guy's blind in this. I mean, I just knew what to say. So I remember he asked me like five different times. I said, I'm checking on it, Gerald. I'm checking on it. I'm checking on it. So finally I had to fess up to the fact that Emmanuel Stewart wasn't coming. Emmanuel, I think, and Lisa had gotten into a beef or something like that. In fact, this is what happened. Gerald McClellan was managed by Emmanuel Stewart and trained by Emmanuel Stewart. I think he had both a managerial and a trainer's contract through some loopholes, isn't it? Okay, Emmanuel's hustling things as well. And I think Gerald didn't want to go that way. And, of course, Gerald went on his own. And when he went over to the U.K., he did not have Emmanuel Stewart in his corner. So if you don't have the gold father in your corner, spit happens. And when I say spit on this show, I mean spit with an H, okay? It just happens, okay? And what happened was he got knocked out of the ring. Nigel Benn did, and the fight should have been stopped right then and there. But there was nobody to protest for Gerald. Of course, the fight went on, and Gerald ended up being, you know, I think, criminally crippled. I think that fight should have been stopped in that first round. There's no doubt in my mind that if the referee taking care of business, Gerald McClellan would not be in the condition he's in right now. And, of course, Nigel Benn and him probably would have had another fight and fought another day. This is the way I look at it. But back to Ollie Holmes, October 2nd, 1980, man. One of the saddest days as far as my life is concerned, let alone boxing history. I told you, October 3rd, here's Muhammad Ali at a press conference wearing sunglasses at Caesar's Palace. And I walked up to him, and I felt okay, this and that, and then I started crying. He said, don't cry for me, I'll be okay. Yeah, never forget that. October 3rd, 1980, my first meeting with the greatest. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Power to the break.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
How did I get up from the knockdowns? I don't know.
That happened again last night. Of course, he got up not once but twice. At the end of the day, Tyson Fury, of course, and Deontay Wilder engaging in a 5-knockdown brawl for 10 rounds, 10 rounds or less. It was stopped in the 10th round. At the end of the day, Deontay Wilder came up short, but he came up short by the shortest of amounts as far as grit was concerned, as far as his determination and is wanting to fight. He went out on his shield. I mean, if you ever wanted to talk about going on his shield, guess what? You got to go out on your shield. Now, whether there be a fourth fight, without a doubt, they're going to do this again because it's going to make some money. Now, Larry Merchant said he doesn't think it would be good for Deontay Wilder to go do it again because basically you've lost three fights in a row. I mean, why do you need to fight a fourth time unless you're going to just make some money? In other words, it's showbiz. So at the end of the day, Deontay Wilder probably needs a couple fights against a guy named like Luis Ortiz maybe or something like that. In other words, not a guy that's totally gone, another guy that's totally got it either. So he's got to find himself a good couple of comeback foes to build that confidence again. And, you know, if he really wants to be a boxer, And I roll my eyes at that one because he can't. He just can't be a boxer. In other words, he should just go back to the basics. The basics are the jab sets up the right hand. And if he just did that, I mean, I think he could do a lot more than a lot. He could prevail and do a lot more than he's done thus far. I really do, because he throws hooks and he's 6'7". They get wide. You get sloppy, this and that. If he just threw direct shots, Deontay Wilder, you'd have a whole lot going on for you. But guess what? The jab last night, that jab to the body in the first round, That wasn't thrown correctly. His shoulder wasn't right. In fact, he was throwing a jab and the arm was down this and that. He was a sucker for a right-hand counter. And once Tyson Fury countered that a couple of times, guess what? The strategy of Deontay Wilder was out the window. Of course, soon thereafter, both guys were getting knocked down. Wilder knocked down three times. Fight eventually stopped. At the end of the day, Tyson Fury, the world heavyweight champion. Now, next week, we hope to have the WBC president, Mauricio Sulaiman, on today's the Sunday edition of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, and Claire Burke. Claire Burke is always a character, per se. I love to have her on. She's got, you never know what she's going to say. She's like a firefly, I kid you not. Anyway, Mauricio and hopefully Larry Merchant as well next week. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, 35, 36, make that 37 plus years now of knocking out all bumps. I thank you so much for tuning in to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Of course, this is your inside look in the world of boxing, brought to you by the World Boxing Council. Check out the WBC's interactive website at WBCboxing.com. The executive producer, the one that's been struggling for a couple of weeks now as far as his health concerned, but the great Scott Cuddy, he endured today. I thank you so much, Scott, no doubt about that. He's dear to me. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, often imitated but never duplicated, Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 217.